Now, a station that's giving you back the power to speak your mind. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
Let me welcome my guests. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, David. Good afternoon to all the viewers. Sorry, listeners on air this evening.
Well, not only if you say viewers, because people just be watching us too. Radio, long-time radio was... Raise the mic a little bit, Right, long-time radio was a thing. You hear them and you had a hope to see them on the street and then hear the voice and say it. Now they could see you.
Yeah, well...
when I say viewers...
And we have a lot of multi-talented radio hosts as well also too, who were able to make the jump to different platforms and expand the opportunities.
So very really, well said.
We're really grateful.
Very well. That's true. Media has evolved. Let's tell them who you are first.
Okay, my name is Derek Achong. I am senior reporter at Guardian Media Limited.
I cover
court with a lesser extent on crime, but mostly court. So we're talking High Court, Magistrate Court, Privy Council, CCJ, Court of Appeal.
Wow.
Anything that happens in court, I am pretty much responsible for it for Guardian Media and to provide information and reports for our listeners, viewers, and readers.
Use our one-man department if you go on vacation.
Essentially, we don't really see much court reports when I'm on vacation, so I usually take my vacation when the court is on vacation. So
well
July,
said.
August, and Christmas.
You take it. What, you like a teacher? You get multiple vacations? I don't get your job. Anyway.
teachers have more time off.
Yeah, they get more time off.
A difficult job. A very difficult job.
Nonetheless.
We have to accept that.
Yeah. Nonetheless. Let's talk a little bit about Amira Lolittle. You know, he appeared before... The Masters.
Well, yeah, so Isan Constant, her stepfather, would have appeared before a High Court Master today. Previously, you would appear when you charged with any criminal offense.
Magistrate.
Before a magistrate. There was a change with the abolition of preliminary inquiries in December last year and new criminal proceeding rules. So now the magistrate, they have taken away preliminary inquiries from the magistrate. That's where basically they would assess the evidence and say, if the police have presented a valid case to go to trial, that is now being done by High Court Masters in an attempt to speed up the criminal trial process.
I was told that today because I did some investigations today. Now, he would have been charged over the weekend?
Yeah, he would have been charged over the weekend.
When did the murder take place again?
Last week Monday.
Today is Monday, so it's actually 7 days.
Quite quick.
That's what we're saying. It's quite quick, but... So the police held him last week, Monday. When I called her wrong, because, you know, he appeared before the Masters, smelling, you know.
Well, from what we understood, with the appearances before the Masters, with the COVID-19 pandemic, usually they would take persons to a magistrate court to make their first appearance. Now they do it virtually via video conferencing from the police station that they were detained in. In a situation where it's a lesser criminal offense and they could get bail, they will get bail in the police station and then leave. So he appeared from the police station today. We understood that when he appeared before Master Sukraj Goswami, he was bareback. The master would have inquired, well, why that is the case. The police would have explained that when they went to the holding cells to bring him to the video conferencing suite, you know, he was covered in human feces. So the master braked for a moment. She stood down the matter, and then she would have allowed the police to assist him to put on a fresh change of clothes and then appear before her. And he was sent for a psychiatric evaluation at the St. Anne's Psychiatric Hospital. His attorney, Mario Merritt, would have applied for it, and police prosecutors did not object. They actually supported it. So for the next 2 weeks, he will spend at the St. Anne's Psychiatric Hospital, where they will conduct an evaluation of his mental health. These things usually take 14 days, but they can take a bit longer. So he has to reappear in court on the 1st of May, when a progress report will be given. The master would either be given the report from the psychiatric evaluation, or she would be told that more time would be needed, and... You know, she could decide from there whether she would extend the time for him to stay in St. Anne's to complete the process. But if it's completed, she can make a determination in terms of, you know, remanding him further. While we do have bail for murder, it's a recent concept based on a landmark Court of Appeal decision from 2 years ago. You have to apply for bail. So the default position is that you will be remanded to custody and then you will apply subsequently for bail. So most likely after the psychiatric evaluation, she would be best placed to decide whether he should remain at sentence to receive possible treatment, or depending on what the doctors at St. Anne's say, whether he should be remanded at a normal remand facility, Golden Grove, Port of Spain.
You know, it's very interesting that you gave us this. I would make a pronouncement. This is me. This is the man in the taxi right now in the middle seat. He playing mad.
No, it is possible. And a lot of people, especially when, you know, they commit or alleged to have committed gruesome crimes, you know, they... This is not unknown. I mean, people read the papers, they watch television. So, you know, you're right. There are some situations where people start to play mad from the time they're held and they're given an opportunity or audience before a court in order to, you know, possibly get away from being placed in the prison population or, in the long run, a possible defense at a possible trial. Or, in a rare or exceptional case, you know, you might not be able to go on trial due to insanity, but that all depends on the reports and the psychiatric evaluations that are done.
You know, I often wonder if they can thoroughly determine whether a person could stand. I mean, you and I can't make that pronouncement. We are not trained psychiatrists. We don't know. But I often wonder about it. They say once mad, always mad, right? You don't ever recover. Yeah. You have to live on medication. Now, I don't want to say, I say mad, man, you know, it might sound like, oh my gosh, you're so harsh. But once you have been diagnosed with mental health issues, you subjected to medication thereafter.
And counseling and these kind of things. And it's not like, as I try to explain to some people, it's not like fixing a car.
No.
Where you're putting up
new
brakes pads and, you know, it gripping better on the road.
And
The mind is a much more complex thing. So even with medication and with treatment, you know, recovery is not guaranteed.
It's not. And recovery is never 100% as far as I was told. I was a bit concerned about the feces covered prisoner this morning when I heard about it. So I started to do some inquiries as to what happens to someone. And, you know, what I was told by police officers is that when you are held, for example, that person was held last week, Monday, or early Tuesday morning. The murder was committed Monday night, right?
Yeah.
So early Tuesday morning, the person was held. They would have been taken to the Five Rivers police stations.
Yeah, the police station.
Or we say, it's up a big sign mark, Five Rivers. But Five Rivers, Aruka, same thing.
Potato, potato.
In this scenario. So they would have been taken to that junction there in a station cell. And in that station cell, they would be in the police custody. We understand that the DPP didn't stick less than 7 days later.
I mean, it didn't seem to be a complex case. You had the mother coming forward to the police and the police accompanying her to the scene where they found this gruesome discovery, where they made this gruesome discovery. He was there, so they didn't need to, you know, look for him or apprehend him. As you used the example before with the man hiding in the forest, so you held him. You know, who knows if he made any oral utterances to the police at that time, any admissions. I mean, at the end of the day, he is innocent until proven guilty, but no doubt if he made any admissions, that will be brought to court eventually. So, yeah, I do think it was so complex in terms of, you know, piecing together the case and presenting it to the DPP in a scenario like that.
It may seem open and shut.
Yeah.
To the public. We might think it's open and shut. From what I was told in my investigations is that police officers have a very difficult task ahead. It's a very difficult thing to try someone for murder.
It is. And to be honest with you, quite frankly, I've been covering court for the past
12 years.
And I've seen more acquittals. At least 3-1.
Yeah.
In terms of convictions.
For murders.
Over the years, I could sometimes count on my hand within a year.
How much
convictions? It has improved. I must say it has improved somewhat. And that is a lot to do with plea bargaining, whereby the DPP, you know, has discussions with the accused persons and their attorneys and decide whether, you know, they could be pleaded a lesser offense. You know, so in some cases, manslaughter, it may be like when you kill someone in a robbery, you are initially charged with murder. But there's something called the felony murder rule where you kill someone in the commission of a lesser criminal offense. So, for example, you go into someone's house and you're doing a home invasion and you're robbing them and you don't find any money. And you beat the person and you tie them up and you choke them. Where's the money? Where's the money? Where's the money? And they choke on their own vomit and die. That's one example. Or you beat them too bad and because of the blunt force trauma to their head, they get brain injuries and they subsequently die. that is felony murder. You know, so whereas we have the murder as covering every unnatural death that you are responsible for,
yeah.
And the death penalty is the penalty for it, at least on the record. Mm-hmm. There's a whole different debate for another day whether, you know, it can be.
I go and talk about it today, yeah. Trust me.
And you know, but then there's felony murder, so basically, you with an agreement with the DPP, you can plead guilty to felony murder, and the penalty for felony murder is really 25 years in prison. So that is essentially there. I mean, I do think in a case like this, because of the heinous nature of the case, that, you know, even with medical evidence, you know, to say that he may have had diminished responsibility because of mental incapacity, he would have committed this murder. You know, it might be something that the DPP might want a jury to consider. I mean, if he elects a judge alone trial, a judge will consider it at that time. But I think the DPP may... I mean, he has the final say at the end of the day.
Yeah, whether he want 12 of his peers or you want a judge.
No, the accused has his say on whether...
Whether he wants 12.
But the DPP has his say on whether, you know, to prosecute or to give him a plea deal. But I do, as I say, I don't think because of the heinous nature of this crime, that will be on the table.
A plea deal ain't coming out.
You're going to face trial,
and you have, and then he will have the final say whether 12 members, a 12-member jury, or he, judge alone.
The accused chooses that.
The accused chooses that.
I mean, in the interest of fairness, because I think a lot of people think that, you know, you will get a fairer trial by your peers, the layman. I mean, at the same time, the reason why some people elected to is as well is that, you know, people can be somewhat fickle. So, I mean, you might get a greater chance of people being suspicious of the police or of their investigation from a personal experience. So they might be more sympathetic to an accused person in that case, whereas they think a judge might, you know, back the system, back the police, which in truth and in fact, in practice, that has not necessarily been the case. I think I would say it's even based on the evidence. In terms of judges freeing persons and convicting as well also.
One of the things I learned this today, well, not just today, I asked a question about police officers charging an individual. I mean, you have been in the courts reporting for a decade plus. So let's talk a little bit about that very quickly before. To charge someone, in my respected opinion, and sufficient evidence, probable cause, and... enough to bring the alleged accused before a court to decide.
Yeah. So essentially, yes. I mean, technically, that's why the police go to the DPP first, because the DPP is the one inevitably later down the line will have to prosecute the case. So they will determine whether it's sufficient evidence. But there are checks and balances along the way, because to be quite honest with you, I've heard police say that we have a strong case, best DNA evidence. And then when you actually see it unfold in court and the narrative that comes out in court, it's like, this is really what you have. Remember at the end of the day, someone, even in this case, someone you could know 100%, I mean, I don't say 100%, but you could be, want to put your head on a block to say, hey, this guy is guilty.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you have to prove beyond a reasonable
doubt. Beyond the shadow of a doubt. Because yeah. It's not an open and shut as you think. Yeah. And murder is one of the most difficult cases.
I think especially with juries too, because they essentially, although again, back to the death penalty debate, whether it's actually going to be carried out, they feel like they're holding someone's life in their hands. Although it might be the most heinous crime. Remember, at the end of the day, when you say guilty, you essentially sentencing this person to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they would want to be sure beyond a reasonable doubt. So that's why you have now previously with preliminary inquiries where there's an assessment of the evidence and the witnesses. Now there are sufficiency hearings before a master. So it's supposed to take a little bit shorter because usually magistrates have hundreds of cases that they have to deal with, cost case. Previously, a lot of driving offenses that was taken away as well also too with changes to the
yeah, because driving was an offense, now it's just a violation.
Yeah, now it was a violation. Yeah. So all that was done to try to speed up the criminal justice system and speed up, you know, the time it takes for a case to go to trial. Because when I actually started in the media 12 years ago, it was pretty much 10 years. You are charged today, essentially 10 years down the road is when you are going to face a trial. It has improved slightly. It's probably about 8 years now, but that's quite a long time.
You know what, it's this long in the remand section of the prison for a decade.
I've been actually, to be honest with you, I've been to every single prison in Trinidad and Tobago with a special project that we did in for CNC3 and Guardian newspaper previously, yeah. And it when they say jail not nice, it really is, isn't, sorry. I would say for those who are convicted and actually serving a sentence,
it's a better.
It's better.
I was told that.
It is. You are,
the housing is better. There's a dormitory, a dorm area as well. You know.
It's essentially, I mean, this
studio, more humane living.
More humane living. This studio is essentially 10 by 10 feet. I would say.
No, there's not 10.
About. I just say
it's gonna be about 14.
Let's say each cell is half the size and it has 10 people in it.
Wow.
And you have a bucket as a toilet, and you are allowed food in terms of your family can purchase food from the canteen.
That is the remand section.
Remand section.
Yeah, we're not talking the J. We're talking remand here.
Yeah, remand here. Mm-hmm. And so you're allowed to, your family allowed to buy a little Cokes, a little juice. But beyond that, it's 10 people in a hot cell.
For 23 hours a day.
For 23 hours a day. And you're there for 10 years. But so that's why a lot of people say you're guilty until proven innocent.
That's our thing until this landmark decision to have bail for murder. Because we're guilty until, in this country, you have to prove your innocence.
Yeah.
As opposed to trying to prove them having to prove you guilty. As opposed to the foreign states where you are innocent until you can be proven guilty. Here, 9 out of 10 times you're guilty until you can be proven innocent.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the
So rationale. you toured the prison?
Yeah, I toured every single prison facility from Kerr, come
and it stink.
Yeah, it is dirty. The women's prison is the cleanest, of course. I mean, that's obvious. Yeah. Guess those ladies, you know, keep it like their homes.
They tidy it up.
But yeah, it.
But the
it,
fellas.
The fellas.
It is disgusting.
It is disgusting. I mean, they try and do it in a little way. But I mean, if it's 10 of us in a little cell, and I mean, it's kind of hard to tell that fella, but clean up after yourself now.
And then everybody smelling stink because it's sweat.
It's sweat.
I painted a gruesome picture. I had to do this with my son recently and show him something. He's like, "Daddy, no." I said, "Well, listen, this is where you're going up.
No, I think take your time." And I think that point you make there is very valuable. You see, I think it will be difficult to execute, but. You know, like, how long term, your mother might tell the passing by decision, I'll carry inside there, you know, if it misbehave, if you give me back chat and you give me problems again. You know, maybe we might have to carry young persons into there to see what are the consequences for action.
And I think that I am saying this to you, Mr. Archon. Let you and me, however, let's pioneer that project. I think we, Guardian Media, should venture into a situation where we can do something like that. I would love to get the authorities on board with something like that because we have a lot of children out here that don't understand. A lot of young people, you hear them all the time, I go make a jail for you, but I just tell people, make your own jail, me making a jail for nobody.
I think it's an excellent idea.
I don't want no part of that.
But on the flip side, what we must also understand as a society is that whether we like it or not, and whether it is fair or we think it's wrong, those persons who go into the jail system, even this gentleman here, if he is eventually convicted in 7 or 8 or 6 or 4 years time, he will eventually be released. Provided
like Manu Benjamin.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully only you crutches.
So we go to the death penalty debate a little bit. I know it's a lot for the
No, listeners. But let's go. So, we have time. Okay. You have time?
Yeah, I have time.
Well, we have about 20 minutes before the top.
So with the death penalty debate, the reason why the death penalty has not been executed beyond the will of the state and stuff like that is that there's the landmark decision in Pratt & Morgan. Everybody's here about this Jamaican case of Pratt & Morgan.
I for life of
so
me,
all
buddy.
That Pratt & Morgan says is that from the time you are convicted, if you are convicted today, it will be cruel and unusual punishment to execute you 5 years past that date. The problem is that usually the appellate process, so to go to the Court of Appeal, to go to the Privy Council, which is your final appeal essentially, usually takes about 5 years. And I've seen it many times over that in the few criminal appeals that land up in the Privy Council, if we are, the Privy Council is ruling on your appeal and saying that you have no valid challenge to your conviction, and it's, you know, 4 years and 11 months down the road, they will wait until the deadline has expired to give the decision. So they would say appeal dismissed, however, conviction commuted to life imprisonment. life imprisonment does not mean for your natural life. There was another landmark case in which the Privy Council ruled that life imprisonment should be a definitive term in years based on your personal circumstances and the circumstances of the crime you committed. So right now, as we speak, the courts are resentencing dozens, probably into the hundreds, of persons who would have benefited from Pattern Morgan, who cannot be executed because 5 years have passed since the conviction, and who were serving life imprisonment. The average for murder, I mean, the more heinous it is, the higher chances. I mean, you could get your natural life in prison, but generally speaking, I've seen some pretty heinous crimes. 30 years, 35 years. So, provided this guy is able, let's assume he's innocent until proven guilty, that he is able to show some reform there. If he has mental health issues, he, you know, takes treatment and deals with it the best way possible. Or, as we all know, could fake it good. Was never mentally challenged or had any mental health issues in the first place. He can come out in 35 years, potentially.
We are real Mickey Mouse country, you know?
I mean, yes, but you remember places like Britain, they have the same system in place. They do have the death penalty. So, I mean, I am personally pro-death penalty because I believe that they must have consequences for actions. I mean, you know, we could go into the whole debate whether it has a deterrent effect. A lot of people say it does not have a deterrent effect. But the fact is we haven't had the death penalty being carried out since 1999. So essentially, we don't have the death penalty in Trinidad and Tobago. But look at the state that we are in right now. So we might as well try.
But I was watching a documentary, Achong, recently in Texas and other states. There are a few states well in the U.S. that carry out the death penalty, and not just in the U.S., in the European countries as well. And they have resorted to a very humane way to put you to rest. You would have committed a very heinous crime. Look at what happened. I saw the images of this young lady. This young girl.
I can watch it. I see plenty. I see plenty in my time. But I was given the choice, but I was like...
Well, listen, it's etched in my memory. Let's take a phone call here quickly. Hello. Hello? Hello? All right, 627-322-3625-2257. Or you can WhatsApp me at 306-1065 if you have any comments about what we're discussing at this time. So, for me, I being very honest with you, I am one that thinks if the death penalty, if them start to see men neck popping,
they will not have consequences for actions.
And I hear criminals talk. I was asking a question recently, and it's like taking drugs. And I'm not talking illicit drugs. I'm talking like regular OTC, even medications that are prescription given, and your body can become immune. So they say, okay, you're taking this drug for a period of time, even as a schizophrenia person who's diagnosed with schizophrenia or whatever, you're taking this particular drug, your body becomes immune to it, so it's no longer working for you, so you now have to switch to another drug and you move on. I am being told that sometimes when prisoners come out, these repeat offenders, they get seasoned with that jail life.
Yeah, they know what to expect.
So they come out and bail, they do what they do, they get hold. All right, they ain't want to get hold, you know. So they was held, they going back inside of the day, and they're running the show. One prison
Some
officer.
People actually love jail. Eh? That's the next thing to you. They become institutionalized.
That's it.
In the sense where, remember, I mean, back to the jail situation or my experience from going in and touring the jail. A lot of these gentlemen and even some of one or two ladies lack a little structure in their lives. So some persons, while they might hate the fact that their freedom is being taken away from them, they like the fact that it's like a big school.
Yeah.
A boarding school. But it's not nice. But you get to see all their partners. You get to talk to this one. So
and you can still call the outside world. Yeah, hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you and your reporter there.
Yes.
I don't know if your reporter could recall Andy, name Andy Thomas.
I can't recall.
Yes, he gave a detailed description when they hang this guy, hitting the pilot somewhere. I think it's St. Helena, somewhere around here. You can't remember that story?
I remember the facts of the pilot being killed. I don't remember the actual name. I'm 35 years old, to be honest. So I was probably in primary school in those days. But continue.
Okay. Well, he gave a detailed account when they hang the guy who had killed
the pilot. Yeah.
The guy named boy. The guy who had killed the pilot. Somebody said tell him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that the afternoon when they came and they informed the guy that they'll be coming for you in the morning then. You understand? And the guy started ball. But I don't know how the prisons designed inside there, but the news spread all along. And the other prisoners who was in death row now started consoling. I said, nah, boy, joke they're making, boy, they're coming for you. Uh-huh. When they came for him the next morning, you hear?
Yeah.
He started a ball. They had to lift him bodily and to take him to the gallows. He said, all the other prisoners on death row get an instant diarrhea. Just showing that them fellas ain't want to die.
Yeah, you're right. It sounds like a good description, because how it is actually when everybody watched the Port of Spain State Prison, Frederick Street Prison, the Royal Jail. It's literally the execution chamber is literally right next door to the administrative center, and it's also right next door to that row. So if they're cleaning out the execution chamber, everybody on that row knows, because the walls are quite thin.
Before I go, is there a next case with a guy down south? Well, there is a gangster corner him, mm-hmm. on guard the leading, and that's off guard.
Mm-hmm.
And he begged to say a prayer before they kill him. And he was a gangster too.
Mortality, when people see the life in their hands.
All them bad, they bad. It's because they have a gun in their hand, but they don't really want to die, you know. They don't want to die. They don't want to. Why is this when they kill? Why they run in sessions? I kill a man. Because they don't want to hide. They don't want to die. They don't want to die. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So the gallows close to, you saw the gallows too?
So the gallows is basically, essentially a room about this size. Wooden floor, and there's a wooden beam. Old schooler, so you're thinking Pirates of the Caribbean.
You lie. Let me take a call. Listen, oh my, hello, quickly. Hello?
Davey.
Yeah.
You seen the?
I cool, what's up, buddy?
I ain't talking about the family.
Yes, I'm chatting with a journalist here, what's up? One of Guardian Media's top knot.
You know, I pass through all F1 and F2 in the condom. With Dolce and M+.
Really? You want to share your story quick?
I know.
And you're telling me you want to go through.
I looked on the station. I listened to what we're doing.
So you was around. You was there when they dealt with Dolce and them back in 99?
So I didn't tell you.
All right, buddy.
He was in tell me Ramesh, you hang him and you hang him.
Well, all right, thanks. Yeah, I know you don't want to talk about it.
I'm listening to the program, one thing, man.
All right, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, thanks. I know I called him and he didn't want to make a pronouncement, you know, but he have a wealth, a plethora of information and that he could share. So let's go back to this gallows that we have in Trinidad.
Essentially, let's say a 12 by 12.
So our room slightly smaller than the studio we're in. Because it's like 40.
Wooden floor. The floor is not varnished, but it's, you could tell it has stains on it. I don't know what fluids it is, if it's blood. But at the time, about 3 or 4 years ago when we went into prison, you could see the floor was stained. There's a chest. When I say a chest, I mean like picture a treasure chest. So we in Pirates of the Caribbean.
So you're in this room with a wooden floor. Did you notice that trap door?
Yeah, the trap door is there. So it's part of the wooden floor.
Right.
A chest in the corner. We were told by the prison officers at the time that they keep a piece of rope, a little piece of rope from all the executions that they would have done in the chest.
What do you mean keep a piece of rope?
Well, a cotton, like a record.
So every time they had executed a new rope.
Yeah, it would be a new rope that they would test. And the trapdoor leads to downstairs in the prison. So it's on the second story, the trapdoor leads down. And then on the left, it would be there's a doorway leading to condemn the death row cells, where they would lead you into the execution chamber. And the next door is right to the administration office, where everybody typing away, doing overtime, stuff like that.
So them right there in,
and so you could tell, as I say, they strap the rope from this beam. It's not like an even beam where they shave it down and stuff like that. You could tell it's like from a tree trunk from the
piece of wood.
A humongous piece of wood.
A piece of wood. In Port of Spain, they don't hang anywhere else. It's only Port of Spain.
It's only Port of Spain.
Only Port of Spain up on Frederick Street.
So that is essentially the execution chamber. And basically, as you rightly said, described, they don't tell you until it about to happen.
What do you mean they don't tell you?
No, what the gentleman was just describing is like the night before you will be given your last meal. So you wouldn't, I mean, people, the prison, rumors spread just like, you know, Trinidad, like tobacco. But so basically you might hear them cleaning and that way that's why. So even when we were taken into the execution chamber on this tour of the prison, they were like, shh, be quiet, we don't want the prisoners to hear that we're in here, because the instant thought, just like what the last caller would have described, was everybody was at a panic, you know, because the chamber is not used unless it's not entered. The prison officers they may come in and clean up from them, but they don't go in there unless
it's an execution has to go down.
So it was really a rare experience.
So to go in there,
but
they're telling you keep quiet because.
And just to finish it off, with this whole wooden room, all walls, there's one little window, so a little daylight coming through. So it's really a kind of eerie, creepy kind of.
So setup. I always thought, right?
Somebody say deserve for the persons who may
but
be getting there.
I always thought it was a situation where. Because from my understanding, when I did my investigations, I'm not a journalist, but I ask questions and I speak to people, is that they take a civilian, a regular citizen from Trinidad and Tobago, and they bring you in. I don't think it's a prison officer. I'm not sure.
No, the executioner is not prison.
The executioner is a regular citizen walking among you. They bring you in, and there's a button.
No, it's not a button. It's a latch.
A lever on the floor.
Yeah.
So they put this rope around your neck. They cover your face first.
Yes,
so they cover your face and they cover your face and
correct.
They put the rope around your neck. They say underneath you, the box that they're going to put you in is there.
Yeah. So basically when you fall, you fall to the first floor.
Right.
And the first floor is a room by itself that have
the coffin there.
Correct.
You're hanging over the coffin. So when they cut you down, it's just to drop you in that box per se. I don't know how true it is.
No, well, I don't think they're dropping the coffin straight away. What happens is that the doctor who would be on hand would have to...
Well, before they cut you, you'll come and pronounce it.
Yeah, pronounce it then. I don't know if you remember that, same back to what the last caller was talking about with Dool JD. While I was in primary school at the time, I remember seeing a picture in the newspaper with sheets covering the bodies, because obviously they weren't able to show the bodies while they were being transported from the execution chamber.
Mm.
But it had blood at the bottom. At the bottom, like at the heels, and that's where they cut the heel.
Oh gosh, you give it away.
Yeah.
Now, that is what I'm saying, right? That is me, you know. I open the keep you after news if I have a dog out. You understand? Because that is me. Jude coming in 5:30, girl. He's mob. Yeah, once he ain't going nowhere, we talking. Because you see, this.
And the clock, so basically, I have nothing to go back to, so you have until 5 o'clock if you want.
Are we talking about, boy? So, all you call me after 4 now. Let me get this out, right? What I was told, they put the thing over your neck. Over your, the covering is black cloth. So, you're not seeing nothing. The rest the noose wrong here. And there's a priest come in and give our last rites.
Yeah.
So, the priest will walk in. Whatever religious body, governing body you belong to, will come in and say something to you. Following that, at the stroke of 6 p.m., because we just kill you at 6 o'clock in the night. In the morning.
It's the morning, I believe.
We saw morning killing.
I believe we haven't done it so long that.
Now it's morning, morning. Dool Chedi and Glenn Ashby was the last one.
Yeah.
So the last 10 people executed in this country, they commenced at 6 a.m. because.
I think they were doing Dool and then three.
Everybody was three.
Batches, yeah.
It was three. So in that one time, Dool and two others. Then our next one, Jeremiah, two others. And so nine people was executed over 3 days. And they were buried in unmarked graves in the Happy Cemetery, or what is it called? Happy.
Yeah, that is the prison cemetery.
That is the prison cemetery up in Golden Grove.
Yeah. I mean, oddly enough, as you know, you asked me to describe it, you know, what was the most profound thing that the prison officers would have said at the time? Because quite frankly, even to let us in the room, they had this kind of aura about the place, meaning to say they themselves seem scared. Of the actual execution chamber. And to be honest with you, I'm not saying this is the general consensus, but from the ones that we spoke to, they didn't seem too enthused. And how I put the question to them at the time was, is at the time, every month they were killing a prison officer, essentially, sometimes two. And I told them, I say, guys, I mean, this some of these guys might have been the ones who kill your brethren, you know, your batch. You don't want, you know, I would be lining up
to see them.
To want to pull the lever mm-hmm. in a scenario like that. And they were actually, you know, commendable to them. We're talking about no and the need for rehabilitation and the effect that even those killings, so the older prison officers, those executions at the time, but the dual shady ones, that it had a psychological impact on the prison officers.
That's why they don't use them.
Yeah, that's why they can't.
They don't use them.
Because it's, yeah, I mean, you would think that, you know, these prison officers who dealing with these prisoners, taking threats, people coming home by your house, making threats.
So you're happy to kill them?
You would think that, you know, you would have some form of animosity, but credit, as I said, to a lot of the prison officers. I'm not saying it. They don't have any vindictive ones or malicious ones out there.
Well, once
you did. But, you know, they were very strong on the need for rehabilitation and, you know, that being part of the solution. I am from the other side of the divide. I think that we need the death penalty at this stage in order to reset the minds of a lot of these criminals. Maybe if after we do a couple dozen, it might have the necessary effect. A, there are consequences to your actions.
But you're killing me, boy. Achong, why you pooping bullets when you kill somebody? I was speaking to one police officer this afternoon who's an attorney at law, and he was saying he believes that the gruesome nature in which you take someone's life should be meted out to you.
I think so.
So you shoot somebody, we shoot you back. You stab up somebody, let we stab you back. If it's 10 stab, you gain all and dead. Face what a person face. You decapitate someone, we cutting off your head too. Because
I will go a step further. I mean, it might sound extreme, but I think somebody listening, like it. My personal view, and it's not the view of Garden Media, but I mean, if you don't want it, that's the same way if you kill my mother. Well, if you don't want to face the consequences, just like what you described there.
We kill your mother.
Simple as.
Did your mother dead? There was a time.
I mean, it might be controversial, no, but I think that
There was a time. There was a time when that was the case in Israel, in the days of the Israelites and that kind of thing. You know, eye for an eye and that kind of thing. And that is what people need to understand. But I personally think if you kill my mom, just say, and you don't have a relationship with your mother, me taking out your mother ain't gonna do nothing for you.
Fair enough.
So I dealing with you. That's why I say it's not just about taking out the life of a person. As a matter of fact, in historical Bible times, if you happen to cause death to someone, accidental, or what we call justifiable homicide, so to speak, you would then have to flee the city that you was in through whatever tracks and channels and go to another city, and you would have to be banished from where your hometown and stay there for a period of time until the passing of family members and etc. before you could be reinstated into society back there if you are alive at the time the last member of that person's family would have passed. That was back in the day.
They had some wisdom in it, because if you look at it, and while we might go on interview, for instance, I mean, let's go back to the Amira case. We don't really think beyond the initial, well, how do you feel, even in the media, of the impact of violent crime on the family and families of the victims. I'm talking about, let's say a mother or a father is killed. Who is the breadwinner of the family? Beyond the fact of missing birthdays and Christmas and celebrations and stuff like that, financially, this family could be in ruin.
You have
beyond, and the mental effects, some people have not recovered. When you hear these stories 10 years later, even when the prosecutors present the victim impact statements, you know, very few, you know, say, well, I forgive him and, you know, God will judge and stuff like that. But most of them, the majority, 99%,
have not
recovered. Some want revenge, but, you know, some through their faith in God and stuff like that, you know.
They forgive you.
Learn to forgive. But I'm going to say, they don't recover. You don't ever recover. Think about it. I mean, some people don't even recover when a relative passes naturally.
True.
Imagine under these gruesome, you come home in a scenario like that and you find your mother or your father they bled out, on the home, in the home that, you know, they sacrificed to purchase and to maintain over the years. I mean, you know, for some people, I could understand them wanting to have to sell the house and move on, because you have good memories, but then you have this horrific thing that
happened, keep on replaying, and it overshadows the good memories. So I want you to take me back a little bit right after the news about this room that you talk about, because it shows how Gilligan Island we is, boy.
Yeah, I mean,
a piece of wood across the thing.
I think honestly they would have invested more. I think the state, but and the prisons juggling a lot with a quite small budget. So, you know, we could forgive them. But if they're not carrying out any executions, the modern execution methods that you're talking about, where they're using gas now or lethal injection, might be more humane in a sense.
But then why we want to be humane?
Especially...
Because I was watching something that happened, the Cleveland abduction. And I think you all should take a look at it. We're talking about 11 years, three women was abducted over a period of time and held, one being forced to abort a baby and the other one given birth before they were actually rescued. The Cleveland abduction is something that you should take a look at. It's a what to watch, something I used to do on this show. A what to watch, you can check it out on Netflix.
Are you tired of the same old boring drive home from work? Look no further. Get ready for the ultimate after-work rush with Freedom 106.5 FM's The Overdrive with Davey. Mondays to Fridays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Let Davey take you on a thrilling ride of non-stop entertainment and education. He covers the topics of the day, delves into the latest food and lifestyle trends, and brings dynamic guests from exciting professions to share their professional stories and experiences. Take advantage of this energizing and engaging experience. Tune into Freedom 106.5 FM Mondays to Fridays, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. for The Overdrive. Overdrive with Davey. The ultimate way to end your day with a bang.
Chatting with our journalist here, Mr. Achong. Don't forget, coming up on Wednesday is the family mediation, where we're going to get individuals coming out from that environment, such as Joanne Chokery, who is an expert in mediation, family mediation. She's also certified and an attorney at law. Christine Cole, a distinguished certified mediator and trainer. Remember, we dive deep into the art of conflict resolution. So don't miss family mediation resolution, conflict resolutions, tying up my words here, watching the script. Wednesdays from 4:05 to 4:35, right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, where healing starts here. Achong, welcome back.
I just listened to that last ad there. That's actually something that's very, 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 very important. I think our listeners should listen out to it, because I think we as humans think, you know, we are the best. We are infallible, you know, and we don't need to change. But, you know, listening to programs like that will help us in terms of conflict situations. And, you know, I actually will definitely be trying to listen out.
Well, trust me. On our Wednesdays, the show is carded for 4:05 to 4:35. But most of the time, we run an hour. Yeah. The information with Joanne Chokery and Christine Cole, sensational, phenomenal. We talk, and you know me, I like, you see, for me, it's like always being in touch with the man on the ground. I hate to sit down with someone. I don't want to say hate, that's a very strong word. But I have a pet peeve with dealing with persons who only want to give me words up there and
empty and
phrases. And, yeah, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. While you and I could understand it, I have listeners across the board that when we are finished with an interview, they must be able to understand. The interview must be relatable. We must be able to make an impact in someone's life. The budget debate, the budget announcement many years ago. When them done with the budget, you understand anything? As I lost.
Everybody want to know, where's the sweetness?
Where's the sweetness? Yeah, we miss it. The raised flower, we hearing that. The maize minimum wage, we hearing that. So when you talk words like expenditure and income and the GDP, we understand what those things mean with the index and all, but the average citizen don't. Mm-hmm. So why are we speaking in those connotations that they can't relate to? Why? It doesn't make sense. So I believe in breaking down the science of the thing. That's why I am very graphic in my thoughts and how I dispense or deliver with an interview. That's why I said we're going back to this little room, because though we're not on television where we can physically, with a camera crew, show you, when Davy and Achong don't talk here, you don't know what's going on. But somebody sent me a message and they said, where is it? Here it is, right? They're talking about the death penalty being a deterrent. And people are saying it's not a deterrent. I beg to differ now, you know. And I'll tell you why. You tore the prisons. I envy you right now, because I wish I would love to tour the prisons and come here and explain to the citizens what it is like in there, what happens. I haven't been given the chances yet. But here the thing. You said something that was very salient in the last hour. You said when we got into the death chamber, we had to keep quiet. Shh, don't talk too loud, because you don't want to rattle or startle the other prisoners on death row, which is within earshot or just down the hall. So if that startles them, movement and activity in that death chamber, how could we say it wouldn't be a deterrent?
I agree. I 100% agree, Davey. As I said previously, for the past 20 years, more than 20 years now, almost 25 years now, we have not carried out the death penalty. 1999 was the last
one. The last one, Glenn Ashby.
So, for all intents and purposes, while it's there on paper, it's not been executed and can't be executed. If 5 years have passed, but as I explained earlier too, the appeal process generally takes 5 years. So essentially, the Pratt & Morgan will kick in.
Unless
we speeding it up. So my counter to the persons who are anti-death penalties is that we don't have it right now. And look at the situation we are in. It's only getting worse.
Let me ask you, why we had to take 5 years on an appeal? You have been in the court system for many years watching these things. Why are we taking 5 years?
Number one, the convicted prisoners know about Pratt & Morgan. They have enough bush lawyers in the prison to explain to them, boy, don't worry about that. You just wait 5 years. Your sentence will be committed to life imprisonment, and then you will eventually get a sentence. So the prisoners are well aware. Yes, there are deadlines in place, but generally speaking, previously, credit to the judiciary, they have, you know, over the past few years, increased the complement of Court of Appeal judges. But previously, there were only a handful who had to deal with all the civil cases and criminal cases in the country. So, and cases emanating from the magistrate court. It's an excuse for them, but, you know, they would claim that they had a heavy workload as such. So sometimes it would take 2 years to deliver a judgment from the hearing date. It has improved significantly since. Also, these convicted persons will also have to get lawyers to represent them. There's legal aid, yes, and the public defenders now. And for instance, in the Privy Council, there are NGOs in foreign countries, in Britain, for example, who are anti. So they will take on some of the cases in order to challenge the death penalty there. But when the cumulative effect of all of that is you have a 5-year window from conviction to get it done. So it is possible. It can be done. Is whether we have the will to get it done.
Whether we have the will. Let me take a
call. Think the population might have it, but
good afternoon.
Good afternoon, David. The reason why they search for that time is all about making money. Right? The lawyers are them, the people on the stretching and stretching it, they were big. And the kind of was our money. Understand?
Very true.
Yeah, with this hangman thing, when Ramit Lawrence Maharaj did implemented 1999, right? Crime rate dropped significantly. 158 murders per year. It had dropped down to. Now with 600, it's sick. And talking about movies that relate to this law-abiding citizen with Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good that movie. That and Kaiser TV. Unusual Suspect.
Yeah.
Make me feel to go and watch Unusual Suspect, boys. Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, that one. Ooh, that one.
Kaiser Soze, boy.
For the younger, yeah. For the younger listeners.
Thanks very much, caller. Appreciate.
For the younger listeners out there, yeah, Usual Suspects. Check it out.
Yeah, you see the Unusual Suspects. You gotta watch that movie, boy.
Watch it to the end.
Yeah, boy. Kaiser Soze, boy. I ain't lying, boy. That was a brilliant man. Game that. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Dobasa, what's up?
Yeah, man. I'm listening to a very interesting, detailed explanation of things we will not see. But I agree that the death penalty is a deterrent. Not only the death penalty, a good curtail too. Because when the victim turned the tables on these bandits and potential killers, petty criminals and serious criminals and potential killers and killers, they start to run like hell. They're running through bush, they're running through grass, they're running through the streets, they hijacking a second car to escape. You know, they not only here, all around the place, there's all these police cases on these criminals. And you know, it's not like they brave, well, okay, I did it. I'm tough. I will face the music. You know, I'm pure evil. I will deal with it as it comes. No. They run and they bawl and they scream and they put up a lawyer in court and then they appeal and they appeal and they appeal and then they beg for mercy and they have people campaigning on their behalf. So it is a deterrent. The more of them you catch and hang or jail or put to the sword in some way or the other, well, that one would be figurative, right? The more of them that pay the price, the less crime we will have. Thank you.
You know, the abductor was Ariel Castro from Cleveland. Now, when they actually held this man and he was sentenced, 1 month into his sentencing, he hung himself in prison. He didn't. So, 11 years, you had the first victim, and then 9 months in, it took a second victim, and then a few months after that, you had a third. And the third one, the last one, is to make a child for you. Because the first victim got pregnant and you killed that. You hit something in her stomach, she had a miscarriage, that was that. And you had these people in your house for a decade. And when they got out and they were finally rescued, and you was held, America don't play. It isn't taking 10 years to try a case.
Months,
2 years max, your case is coming before you're going before the grand jury, and then there's an indictment, and then you're going. As a matter of fact, when the FBI come for you, they have an airtight case. We Dolly House police just have probable cause. We arrest you, we charge you, you know. But now we're looking for evidence to convict you.
Correct.
You understand? When the FBI come for you, they already have it. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have viewed that is contrary to my good friend from Dobasa Trace. I have been an abolitionist all of my life because I do not believe that administering the death penalty is a deterrent to crime and criminals.
And you are entitled to your example? You are entitled to your opinion. I have no problem with that.
Some time ago, we held and we hung the Williamsville Nine with their boss, Dale Chidi. What happened after that?
No, we stopped.
Look at the state of the country.
No. Oh, gosh.
Criminals running rampant.
Mm-mm. Don't use that. Mm-mm.
Don't use it?
No.
Let me just finish what I'm saying. Now, what we need to do is design a society that is in harmony with each other. We need a kinder, gentler nation. The divider, the exchequer, needs to take into consideration where monies are supposed to be spent, particularly on the development of the human resource to guide people in a particular direction, to give them a good option to live better in a society. And if we do these type of things, we are going to reduce the level of criminal activity in the country. If we arrest people who are corrupt in the society, giving bribes and taking bribes and destroying the society, we'll have a kinder, gentler nation, and so we'll be able to reduce crime. But if you tell me that if we start to, like they would say, pop a neck, you know, crime is going to drop, I disagree. I completely disagree. I want to live in a kinder, gentler nation. I want the Minister of Finance to have money that he could spend it in the right way. Right? When I drive on the road and I see a man with a thing want to wipe my windscreen, I say, but why this fellow not doing something productive? You know, look, we need to treat the entire society, because right now the entire society is decadent, it is degraded, and everything else, because it is designed right now to create the filthy rich. And after the filthy rich, you get the dirt poor on the lowest rung of the ladder, and everything is a mess. All of these services are corrupt. The individual there, I think, is from the prison. No, you're a journalist.
I'm a journalist, but I have a question for you. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, caller.
Even in the prison services, men go in the prison service and immediately they become a businessman. They open a mini mart. You want marijuana? You want cell phone charger? You want cell phone? Right? How did in our prison men get a machine gun, a sort of shotgun, a grenade, escape from the prison, kill a policeman outside, escape into the city, and they hold nobody yet. You think it's some fly bring that inside the prison? Huh? How get there? How come the prison officers didn't know this was going on there? Let me tell you something.
They probably were bribed or threatened.
The society is completely corrupt. It's a Napoleon Picaroon society. I hope you hear me, Dobasa Trace. Until we decide to change that, we remain in this level of mire and crime that we are in.
Caller,
thank you for listening.
Hold up. Let me ask you one question, caller. We accept that the society is corrupt and violent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you that we need to address the problem at its root with the social problems and ills, and providing opportunities for these disadvantaged youths in order to, as an alternative to crime. I get that. But currently, we have a bunch of individuals out there, a large amount of individuals, who seem intent on committing crime. Violent crime, that is, and then there are these heinous cases like this one with the four-year-old girl. How do we deal with them until we are able to have this utopian society? How do we deal with
them? It's like the more get killed is the more that come. And it is because of the society that we're in. Your colleague, Anthony Wilson, came to this frequency. And he said the greatest white-collar crime taking place in this country is the non-payment of taxes, which right now is 40% of the taxes the state not collecting. It amounts in some cases to $30 billion annually. Anthony Wilson said that is the greatest white-collar crime, and that has to be solved. When you can solve that and give money to the exchequer so they could do the things that ought to be done to change the society, we'll have a better society.
Somebody knows it.
Criminals are stop stealing your money, driving
All right. Okay.
But where's personal responsibility? We can't say because the politicians are corrupt or the persons in authority taking bribes that we must do it too.
Yes, but you see, I'll tell you something. The human being has a basic instinct to survive. And when it comes to a point that he's jammed in a corner, he will do anything to survive. We need to change that. We need to change the way in which we govern the society. And until we change these things, we remain where we are. I hope you have something to say about constitutional reform, because it may very well help us to get out of what we are in if that reform is accepted.
Well, okay? that will be a longer debate for another day. But yeah, right. thank you, sir. Please do enjoy your civilian.
You want a paracetamol?
I think he has some good points. But the thing
sit down here every day.
I think he sees and nothing is wrong with that. I respect that he has that, you know, he wants to see the world as a better place now. I'm more of a realist, you know. I do think that while what he says is true, that if we fix those social problems, we will, you know, be a better society. That much is certain.
Good afternoon.
It's impossible to do so.
All right. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Colin Bahagi. Now, I want to hear your reporter's view on the bail for murderers.
Ah. Okay. All right. Cool.
Wait. I have a little gap to fill in before I leave.
No problem.
I am the guy who called about the Andy Thomas issue earlier on, right?
Okay.
Now, Andy Thomas was on a murder charge. He had served a long time in prison. He got pardoned, right? And he, the Express, in fact, went to interview him. And that is where the guy who only called us, Glenn Ashby, that was the man I was talking about, who was sucking him out at the time. And they came for him in the afternoon. And when they came for him, he started bawling the place, right? So I'll give a little detail already, but I just want to clarify that Glenn Ashby was the man I was talking about.
Okay, I understand. Okay, so
he started bawling the place.
Yeah, the one with the sucking the mango, he actually had an appeal and they went ahead with the execution. They went ahead with the execution nonetheless, which was improper. But the caller asked about bail for murder. So previously, as far as a lot of people in living memory, there was never any bail for murder. The bail act spoke about not judicial officers, magistrate judges not being able to consider bail for murder for persons. A couple years ago, an ex-murder accused, he was subsequently killed, right? He would have filed a landmark case challenging that notion. And what the Court of Appeal would have ruled and was subsequently upheld by the Privy Council is that, you know, the legislature, with the separation of powers, that's where the legislature, parliament, the executive, the government, and the judiciary, you know, where there's interaction, there is some separate, there must be separation. That's essentially the principle of separation of powers. The judiciary was saying, the Court of Appeal said in that case that, you know, you can't infringe on our ability to consider bail. And that was an unconstitutional infringement on our power as a judiciary to consider bail for murder. It's not that you are guaranteed bail for murder, but that it can be considered by a court. Previously, the law, the way the courts previously accepted that they had this fetter on their discretion. But when this case was brought, the issue was considered by the Chief Justice and several senior Court of Appeal judges, and they...
No, but I could agree. I could agree with murder for bail.
Because what people...
Bail for murderers.
What people have to understand is that since the decision, only a handful of persons have actually been granted bail for murder. I think they had one case where they subsequently held a man with a gun, but generally speaking, it is not of the hundreds of persons awaiting trial for murder, they're not all coming back out on the street. It's judges have been very selective in who they will be granted bail for murder. So you know, the considerations that they will consider is obviously the length of time that you have been on remand awaiting trial. So some persons were waiting 12 years. It would be the strength of the prosecution's case. Also, they would consider if previously you would have threatened witnesses, but then no, you can't get any bail. But what persons have to understand is that Davey, you in your house, right? And somebody come in and I use an extreme example, they interfere with your wife and your daughter. But in that, you managed to free yourself and arm yourself with a kitchen knife. And you deal with the situation how you see fit in anger of witnessing that horrendous thing happen to you. You deal with him proper.
And he subsequently died.
But at the time, you hit him from the back. Your wife and
you hit him
some good stuff. You are going to be charged, more than likely, with murder because basically, while it's a you're claiming provocation, self-defense, you're in a heated situation. You're stabbing from the back and... It was not. He was not an immediate threat for you. That's how self defense work. You have to be an immediate threat to the person. So that's why they say when with your back turned, if somebody's running away, a bandit is running away from you, and you shoot him in the back, it's not self defense anymore because there's essentially law no more threat to you. So in a scenario like that, David, you get charged with murder because you went a little bit above and beyond because of what you witnessed. More than likely, at your eventual trial later down the road, you will be acquitted by the jury because they're going to feel because somebody in you went through the situation and, you know, they might sympathize with you, and or you might get a manslaughter. And but in the meantime, you had to wait 10 years in jail.
That's my point.
Never commit a crime in your life.
You never did. So that's what I could say. I could agree with bail for murderers. In the Americas, that's what they do.
No, exactly. And I'll give an next example. Next
time,
a woman who has been going through abuse for years, domestic abuse for years, financial, physical. She get beat up enough times. I mean, we could debate whether she went back or not, or she leave the man. She stick around and she get licks. She finally get fed up one day and she decided to poison him. She cook a nice pilau and lace it down with poison in a big glass of Moby and mix it sweet. And she give him it and he die. That is murder.
Yeah, that's premeditated.
That's premeditated. But I talk about years abuse. She teeth get boxed out. Black eye is a normal thing. She learned to put on makeup a special way because
one to cover it.
I mean, in a scenario like that, she must
temporary insanity.
She may or may not be punished, but should she wait 10 years in jail
before to be acquitted and all them things? Let the woman live and be on bail.
But if she's eventually convicted, she will face the consequences for the action. So I mean, while persons were a bit aghast by the fact that, you know, the courts are considering bail for murder, it's very rare. It's very, very... And even the ones who have been granted bail, the conditions are so strict that, you know, especially with electronic monitoring and you'll be put on a curfew. I mean, it's Trinidad. It's always possible for some exceptions. But, you know, it's not like normal life as we know it, but there is some element of freedom. As I said, it's exceedingly rare. It's very, 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 very rare. So I don't think all the hullabaloo and all the panic based on it, I don't think, you know, they're letting back out all the criminals, and that's why there's an increase in crime.
Mr. Achong, I want to tell you, thank you so much for chatting with me. I have to switch gears to Safety Mondays with Officer Jude Rogers.
Thank you so much, David, for having me. It was a pleasure.
Now, you and I, listen to me very carefully. It's my first interview with you. By the way, you're Trinidadian?
Yes, I am.
You ever eat bread and condensed milk?
Yeah, but I like the condensed milk by itself out of this with a spoon.
Well, you different, boy. Diabetes coming your way. Eat different, boy, Jude, boy. Well, I have never had bread and condensed milk. And one of my texters is now messaging me and say, Davey, don't forget to baptize him. Eh? It's a baptismal question that we ask all our guests if you ever had it, because I have never had it. You know, and my phone lines are ringing, so it simply tells me you and I gonna be coming back here this week sometime. If not this week, next week, we're gonna talk again. I'll have Melissa call you. I will call you too. We're gonna talk because the information they wanna talk. Let's debate this thing.
Thank you so much for having me, David. I can't wait to come back, and good afternoon to all the viewers and enjoy
and listeners.
I can't
thank
wait
you.
To see you again.
Mr. Achong, thank you very much.
Now, a station that's giving you back the power to speak your mind. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.